Look at that. I look like Elvis.
Sure.
Elvis who?
Stoico. Stoico. Figure skater. Yeah.
You should have been a figure skater.
I know. I could have been. Yeah.
I can see you doing pirouettes.
Stop making fun of me. We're off and rolling. The guys are picking on me. They're picking on me. Hi again, everybody. It's Jungle Jim Jerome coming at you with our weekly episode of Inside Curling. We do it each and every week, as you know. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in and joining and taking part in the show and our Facebook. Lively, really lively this week. We want to thank all our sponsors. We couldn't do it without them. Jackpot City, who brings you what is happening around the curling world. Coyote Tractor, the sponsor of Hot Rock Topics. And Goldline, who brings you In the House, which is our guest spot, which we have today. We're going to interview Bruce Mowat, fresh off a victory in Red Deer. We're always joined each and every week. I'm still not sick of them. I still enjoy them. Our World Curling Hall of Famers, the one and only Warren Hansen, and of course, the other one and only Kevin Martin. I'm down in Phoenix having a tough day. Remember, I was telling you my daughter happens to be here and they shut the water off. The guy didn't pay his bill in the condo she's at.
Really?
Totally. Yeah, totally. The guy didn't pay his power or his water bill. I got up this morning. I'm staying at a place here and the water's shut off. I went, what? This is the same guy own this condo.
So I'm glad we're not all together because that means you haven't had a shower.
You can see I haven't had a shower. I look terrible. Yeah. Anyway, it was a little different here. They're working on the water. So here's what's on the show today. As I'd mentioned, Bruce Mowat's going to join us as in our guest spot in the house. The fifth Grand Slam of curling is in the books. It was the Co-op Canadian Open concluded in Red Deer. Of course, Kevin was there. We'll get some insight onto what happened. Also, we started telling you about a number of provincial territorial championships were completed on the weekend for the Briard and the Scotties. We're going to have a look at that and what's on tap for the next week. For the Scotties and the Briar, a wild card will be awarded to one or more teams in each of the conclusions of all the provincial territorial championships. We're going to take a look at that and who grabs the final spots. That'll be good. Also, down in my neck of the woods in Tempe, there was an event here in Arizona. It's the Wrench, isn't it, Warren? Is that the
Golden Wrench? The Golden Wrench.
The Golden Wrench, yeah. Everyone's got to have a piece of straw. Is that what it is? Good. You know, that guy did many, many wonderful things in curling, and you'd say, do you know the Wrench? And they would go, yeah, the guy with the straw? Yeah, they'd never mention. No one ever mentioned what he did. What are we hearing? There might be a famous curling club in Scotland that might be closing, so take a look at that. There we go. In the house, we've got a guest. Bruce Mowat is coming up. See, he's knocking at the door. We've got to let him in. Let this guy in, for God's sake. He's one of the best curlers in the world. Goldline Curling's Momentum shoes are unbelievably comfortable with a fast, reliable slider, a gripper that will keep you steady on the ice. Learn more at goldlinecurling.com. Bruce Mowat is our guest. Come on in, Bruce. How are you doing, man?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good. We were just talking off. Congratulations, by the way. You knocked off another victory in Red Deer. And we were just talking before you came on. Kevin said, do you know what time it is? Do you know what? You're whipping back and forth across the pond. How are you managing? Are you keeping your head up? Or are you going to fall asleep? Or
I'll manage to stay awake for this conversation, I'm sure. But yeah, no, I've struggled a wee bit with jet lag this past couple of days, but I'm getting there, I think. Just kind of getting back into routines and stuff back home. So it's going to be all right.
How do you guys deal with jet lag?
I mean, every trip's different, I guess, but I think when you're out further west, it's maybe a bit harder when you're coming home. But normally we just kind of take it as we come, and it's been a bit tougher this time.
Congratulations on hitting the podium. There was you took a little break from winning gold medals and stuff. You were just killing it there a few months ago, and then it was like, oh, what happened to Bruce Mowat? And what happened to Bruce Mowat? I'll tell you what happened to Bruce Mowat. Nothing. Okay, he's good. Yeah, he won again. Talk about that, though. Was when you looked at that, you went a little, I guess, a little flat just from not winning. Did you have to change some strategy or what you guys did to get back on the winning side?
Honestly, I just think it's becoming incredibly tough to win these slams. Like, there's so many good teams around, and you have to have a good week just to be into the Saturday and the Sunday. And then for us, this week was just a really good week for us. We played incredibly tough games all week, and then played really well on the Saturday and the Sunday to come out with the win. But yeah, I think we have struggled in the slams recently, and we've actually had a pretty decent season apart from the slams, like won a Europeans and stuff. So we're not like miles away. It's just, yeah, very tough to win these slams.
Yeah, people's expectations get a little unreasonable, you know. Guy plays second, they're like, oh my God, what happened? You know? Hey, Bruce, what did you think of us stealing David Murdoch from you guys and bringing him to Canada?
Well, to be fair, I wasn't that surprised. Like, Dave was always, I feel like he was always going to eventually try and move over there. He has a young family, and his wife's obviously Canadian. So, yeah, it was sad to see him go. But you guys have got a really good guy in Dave. So, yeah, you'll see a lot of good things, I'm sure.
Absolutely, yeah. Kevin?
Well, now, in Red Deer, this is important stuff. The tokens for the bar, one of them had your face on it. Did you end up? Oh yeah. Oh here, yeah. Put it really close to the camera.
Yeah, put that in. Let's see it again. Let's see.
Yeah, oh, well, there perfect. You go. Thank yeah. you. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a great idea.
So they actually framed one for every player that was a part of that. So there was 8 of us. So they gave us all 8 tokens and put it on a frame for us, which was a really nice touch, I thought.
Nice. Because
this has never happened before in any of the events I've ever played. So, yeah, it was a really nice touch that they did that for us. And it was a nice wee memento to take home with us.
People took them home as souvenirs. Almost, just under, not quite 3,000 of them. So is that something that maybe the events should think about doing, maybe?
I think like so. Especially if I'm not sure how much they were, but I'm pretty sure they would have been like maybe a fiver or maybe more than that. So yeah, 3,000 times $5 is quite a lot.
Yeah, they're $7 each. Yeah, $7 each. But did they give you a framed? I'm going to go on here in a sec. Did they give you a framed, like the 8 tokens in a frame kind of thing for on your wall sort of thing? Or
yeah, so I've put it in my spare room. Like it's upstairs. Oh. I could run and get it. But it's basically it's all 8 of the players' faces.
Who were the other players, if you don't mind, or do you remember?
Myself, Brendan Botcher, Brad, Gushu, Nicholas were the men, and then there was Kerry, Rachel, Anna Hasselberg, and Silvana Tirinzoni.
Nice collection. Oh, yeah,
that is awesome. Good.
Yeah,
these guys were picking on me because I play pickleball. Is pickleball something that happens in Scotland? Is that a thing?
So I don't think it's called pickleball over here. It might be a different sport, but we call it something similar. Like it's called paddle. Maybe a different sport. I'm not sure. I've never really played pickleball.
It's kind of like a ping pong. It's kind of like a ping pong, a big ping pong paddle with a ball that's got holes in it. Like it's a...
Okay, that's different to what I'm talking about. But yeah, I've never played it, but I have heard that it's kind of taking off in North America.
Don't rush, Bruce, okay? You're nowhere near the age old enough to play it, okay?
So far.
Hey, come on. It causes the most injuries, I think, to the medical system in the States because a bunch of old guys get out there, they don't loosen up, and then they think they're kids. I was playing, I'll let Warren in here in a second. I was playing when I was down south a couple weeks ago against it. It's just fun. I love it. But anyways, the guy would have been about 65 that I'm playing against. He's really good. He actually dove.
He actually
dove for a ball. As soon as he does, like you get all scratched up, right? And he's not young enough to be diving anyway. So after the point, I was like, what are you doing? If it's that important, just don't hit it and say to me, I could have got it, but I didn't want to dive. I will give you the point.
Kevin, he didn't dive. He just fell over, okay?
Hey, Warren, go ahead. Jeez, that's good. Fun.
Thanks for joining us, Bruce, and congratulations on your win. And as you said, it's not getting any easier, it's getting tougher.
Totally, yeah.
I thought the interesting thing, and I wrote a piece on it and put it on our Facebook group, and we're going to talk about this further, but there were 3 Scottish men's teams in the final 8 playoff in Red Deer. Your team was the oldest at 29. White at 25, Craik at 22 is their average age. So you got three Scottish teams in the top 10 of the world. How does all this happen? Can other countries maybe learn from what Scotland is doing? Do you think that there may be some changes in some other countries as to how they're developing and training their athletes? What's your thoughts on all this?
I do think that it's possible for other countries to do it as well. I think for what we've done since 2017 and since our national curling academy has opened is create a really good atmosphere and environment in one location where we all are able to train alongside each other. We're obviously competitors on the ice, but we're all training in the same environment and we're all putting in a lot of work to get to the top tier in curling. So there's a lot of things that I think in Scotland that we're doing right. It's just obviously not possible for every country because of like location or like size of the country or these different aspects. But yeah, I do think it's also like once you see a team in your country doing well, then it inspires others to try and replicate that. So you never know, like with Joel and his team, what they're doing as an Italian team, it's probably going to encourage a lot more Italian juniors to come through. And you might see in like 4 or 5, maybe like closer to 10 years, a lot of Italian teams coming through. You never know.
Yeah. So I mentioned the three of you. It doesn't end there. You've got Cameron Bryce, who's currently ranked number 17 in the world, and Kyle Waddell. And I think that's probably the youngest team of them all, number 21. And by my memory, there's a couple more. So your Scottish Championship this year should be an interesting one. When is it, and has it ever been tougher?
So it's in 2 weeks' time. We're going down to Dumfries for it. And I don't think it's ever going to have been as tough as this. The kind of five teams that you mentioned are obviously going to be pretty tough to beat. And then we've got, I think, another four junior teams that are coming. One of them just won the World Junior Bronze last year. And then two of the members of that team just won the Youth Olympic Gold today. So, you know, we've got a lot of junior teams coming through as well, and it's really nice to see. We're obviously now the old team, as you
yeah, you're the old guy.
That's 29.
But yeah, it's funny when you're being referred to as the old team, but it's just really nice to see that we've got so many really good young Scottish curlers coming through.
So the juniors you mentioned, are they going through the same type of system as the men and women are, or are they left to put their own teams together? How does it all work?
So it's different, yeah. We only get a certain amount of funding from UK Sport and national lottery funding, but there's a lot of really good kind of grassroots systems within Scotland. The Dumfries itself has one of the best ones. They just have a really good development officer there who works a lot pretty closely with schools and gets like kids coming in from an early age, and then there's other activities that they can join in on, or other days like maybe at the weekends that they can come in and curl outside of their school program. And yeah, it's just they're probably starting off in like a regional academy and then going into a national academy, and then eventually they might be able to get into like where James is at with Performance Foundation, or where us and Ross are. We're called Podium or Podium Potential. So there's kind of a tiered system right now. And I think it has worked over the last few years. Like I've been through regional, national, Performance Foundation, and now into Podium. So
we heard this week that the Doers Rink in Perth was potentially going to close. What's that all about as to why that could be happening? We're hearing a huge resistance to it, and maybe that decision is going to be changed. But what's your thoughts and knowledge about all that?
Just for a bit of context, like the Dures Centre is pretty much one of the most central and busy ice rinks in Scotland. It's under threat right now, but I think they had a really good and productive meeting on Monday, which has kind of helped the situation, and it looks like they're going to be able to stay open. The council in Perth wanted to do a development of recreational facilities, and it has like a swimming pool, and it had a curling rink and all these things, and the curling was going to be left out of that plan to build this thing. So there was a lot of kind of backlash from obviously the curlers, and then, you know, success from previous years where, like, Eve winning the gold at the Olympics and being from Perth obviously had a big thing. Like, we're trying to obviously encourage curling to stay a part of the Perth area. So there was a lot of good things that helped the kind of negotiation with the council to be able to keep it afloat. And I believe, I don't want to talk out of turn, but I believe that the negotiations went really well and that they're now hopefully going to be able to build a curling part to this new building that they're going to be making.
Bruce, you had mentioned this National Academy that you guys have over there. I'm curious, who gets to participate? Who gets to be there and use it?
So the National Academy, it was a bit different. It's been a while since I was in it, but when I was in it, it was basically you're part of, you apply for this National Academy and then you're part of a group of people training in a city. So at, like, I was from Edinburgh, so I was training with people from Edinburgh that were part of this academy. So you just basically apply for it. It's run through Scottish Curling, so it's different from what I'm part of now, which is British Curling, who gets all the funding from, like, UK Sport and National Lottery funding, where Scottish Curling gets funding from their members. So all of our, like, membership fees are paying for partly grassroots, and then they also get money from Scottish Institute of Sport. So there's a lot of, obviously, backers and funders that help with the junior programs. And then once those kind of juniors develop, they can then apply for British Curling funding, which is obviously a bigger program. And it looks more into the elite side rather than just grassroots.
You know, this year at the Slams, Kevin, of course, has been there. The crowds have been unbelievable. It seems like they've, you know, post-COVID, that people are packing the joints and having a good time. You've got your Scottish Championships, you said, coming up. What are the crowds like over there for those events?
Well, it's nothing like the Slams, I guess. We're now in our third year of playing in an arena for the Scottish Championships, which is an amazing opportunity for all of our teams over here. We used to play at Perth in the Jurors Centre, and it wasn't necessarily an arena, but they were able to put a stand in it, so they made it into a sort of arena for us. But this time we're actually playing in a hockey rink that is developed into a curling rink for just that week. It's really nice to be a part of that now, and yeah, it's done really well.
So there we have it. Bruce Mowat is the way you pronounce it. It's spelled M-O-U-A-T. A-T, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So how many mispronunciations of your name have you heard, from Mowat to Mowat to, there must be, does everyone get it wrong, or are we getting there?
No, everyone gets it wrong, at least once. Like, as to be honest, I might say it wrong. I don't even know what it is anymore. I'm so confused by it all. So okay. My team just tell me it's Mowat now rather than Mowat, but who knows?
You're good with it. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's just go with Bruce. Bruce, thanks a million. Congratulations getting back on the winning track, and good luck in the next couple of weeks. And we'll talk to you down the road. Go get some rest, my friend.
I will do. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks, Bruce.
Yeah, thanks a lot. See you soon.
Cheers.
So there he goes. Bruce Mowat. 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 Just call me Bruce. This guy's the real, it's hard to believe, Kev, you're right, at 29. Scotland, as Warren pointed out too, they may be, obviously they're coming on, but he's back in the winning side, Kev, like I said. So he's not going anywhere for a while.
No, and you know, and to be fair, they had quite a few injuries, right? Bobby Lammy hurt himself. Grant Hardy wasn't well for a while. So, you know, they've went through a little bit as a team, but they're all back healthy now, and they are curling up a storm. So watch out in Toronto with the Players' Championship. They're going to be tough, but they have their Scottish Championships, which aren't easy.
Right.
They're pretty deep too now.
Pretty tough.
Co-op Canadian Open ended Sunday in Red Deer. Kev, break it down for us.
Yeah, so, well, the men's final was fantastic. just a couple of, I guess, if you want to call them big misses or big makes or both, overall. The first end, Botcher actually had a tap and a roll behind the center guard. Could have put Mout in a lot of trouble. Ended up, it overcurled, a bit of a line call there. Jammed at the back, got a deuce, but came right back the next end and got the deuce right back again. So it was 2-2 after two. In the fourth end, that was kind of game shot. Botcher's team were all over Mout in three, all over Team Mout in four, had a half rock double off the wall for three, and just hit it too thick and ended up giving up a steal of one in the fourth. And that was kind of the big turning point. Botcher sitting a couple in the sixth, buried Bruce Mout, made a run back double, and then Brendan missed the draw freeze, which gave Mout the deuce. But really the big story was the missed shot in four by Team Botcher. That would have, you know, they get a three in the fourth end. I think it's probably pretty much over. I think Bruce would probably agree to that. So a really good game. Really good game in the men's final. Women's final. Taranzoni steals in seven to go home two up. You think, well, that game's over. Nope. Rachel grabs a deuce in eight, steals the extra for the victory. So a massive win there. Kind of, well, but it's surprising, you'd think, to grab a deuce in eight and then steal in the extra. So, but from the event side of things, I just got off the phone with Red Deer just a couple of minutes ago, and they haven't got final numbers yet because there's still some things that have to come in yet, so they can't give final totals. But one thing they did, Jimmy, which I thought was cool, is they had the tokens for the bar, for drink tickets, with a curler's picture on them.
Oh,
and they're actually selling them in sets of seven or eight of them in a set. And so before it started, we were talking about, well, how many do you think people will collect? And so they kind of budgeted on 1,000 not being turned back in, like people taking them home.
Oh, okay.
And it turned out, no, that was definitely an underbid. It was almost 3,000 tokens didn't come back in. Oh, just under 3,000. Oh, so like, and they were $7 a piece. So almost 20 grand made on like tokens that just didn't come back.
Didn't use them for beer. No.
Right. No, they took them home. Like took them home as a set. Because Bruce Mount was on one of them. And so just a great idea. So something to think about. The other thing they said is, once again, they don't have the complete total for me, but they just said the 50-50s, just they blew it out of the water on the 50-50s. So that's just great. The ticket sales starting Wednesday at noon, every seat was sold from Wednesday at noon on to the end. There were no tickets available.
Wow.
Yeah, complete sellout from Wednesday at noon on to the end, and also a lot of standing room tickets sold. So,
Isn't that great? Yep.
Yeah, I just wanted to give everybody an update as to kind of how they ran. Tons of volunteers, so a really well-run, well-organized event, but they did really well on the financial side too, but I can't tell you exactly because they don't know yet.
The interesting thing about the tokens, you know, with the Briar, there was a point in time we did that. And it always worked very well, but of course you had to buy tokens and et cetera, et cetera. And it was a little cumbersome. So along the way, people wiser than I decided to discontinue it. And I find it quite remarkable that many weren't turned in. That's amazing.
I made the tokens for the 99 Briar in Edmonton, our company back then. Mm-hmm. We had a promotional goods company back then. Still do, but a different company then. And we did the tokens. And if you remember, Warren, we actually put the faces, not a colored picture like it was in Red Deer, but we actually put the picture of Hex Gervais and various top curlers coming out of the coin.
Yeah, like, I have one right here in my desk.
Three-dimensional.
Yep.
Do you have one? Really?
Yes.
So yeah, that was our group that did that actually back in 99. And but the problem is, if you look at it, we'll be able to show people this on social media.
Yeah.
And so when you look at it, you can see they couldn't stack them. Because the faces were coming out. So people collected a ton of them. I don't know, Warren, if you can dig that up for next week's show. How many?
It was large.
It was large. I was thinking 7,000 didn't come back.
Wow. I would think at least that.
Something like that. But anyway, it was a really good idea. I don't know if it's happened at a Briar since.
It stopped. Fun. I think we just continued that probably 3 or 4 years later when everybody decided it was too difficult to do. So
how about, we were the ones that we designed them and we made them. You just had to.
Yep, I know.
And I delivered them. Myself and Dan, his name's Dan Winston Taylor, great friend. We delivered those boxes of those tokens. They were heavy, but we actually brought them in the door for you guys. Yep. So you didn't have to do any.
But you realize they have reduced it to the point these days there's no longer any cash allowed in the Briar Patch. So you can't even use cash for currency. You've got to use debit or credit.
Mm. It's hard to believe Hex Gervais would fit on a coin.
He used up the whole coin.
Yeah,
he used you know what? Hey, guys, I just went to Safeway on my way home just a couple minutes ago, and talking about Hex Gervais, I just ran into Stan Gervais.
Oh, did you?
I did just now. So it was great to see him. I hadn't seen Stan for, I see him once in a while, probably a year though, but he's looking great. He's looking great, and what a surprise. So fantastic to just, we're going to talk about Hex Gervais now, and I just ran into his son just a few minutes ago.
Oh, cool. I'll tell you the other thing is when I was in the Briar Patch, I would have about 25 tokens a day, and believe me, none of those made it home. Okay, none of them every day. Never saved one. Okay, they all.
That was good of Warren to give you 25 tokens a day.
No, I stole them. I just dug my.
He was supposed to give them to the clients. He told me he wasn't drinking.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that was that worked for the first 8 tokens, and then I got busted. There we go. Warren, give us an update on the provincial territorial playoffs.
Okay, we'll do a quick rundown. There was quite a few going on last weekend, and there's a lot more going on this weekend. So let's start with the Nova Scotia Tankard, because that was the only men's event that took place last weekend. So the defending champion, Matthew Manuel from Halifax, defeated Owen Purcell 8-2 in an extra end. And they will now represent Nova Scotia at the Brian Regina the first week of March. This is for the second year in a row. And again, Colleen Jones's son is on that team. So a little bit of her legacy continuing on through her son into this year's Briar. On the Scottish side of things, start again with Nova Scotia. Team skipped by Heather Smith defeated defending champion Christina Black by a score of 5-4 in an extra end. It looks like Jill Brothers is the person who's throwing last rock on that team, and guess again who the coaches of this team are. Colleen Jones and Kim Kelly. So that's quite a team. The team's ranking on the Canadian team ranking system is currently number 34, so they're in from Nova Scotia. In New Brunswick, Melissa Adams defeated Sylvia Quinlan 7-4 in the final, and they now have the right to represent New Brunswick at the Scotties in Calgary towards the end of February. Melissa Adams is currently on the CTRS ranking number 46. In Saskatchewan, a newcomer, 22-year-old Skylar Ackerman, defeated veteran Nancy Martin in the final and by a score of 10-9 in an extra end. So she will represent Saskatchewan. She's currently ranked number 11 on the Canadian team ranking system, so is doing quite well, and this is a young team just starting to come up through the ranks. Northwest Territories, Carrie Galusha defeated Sharon Cormier 8-3 in the Northwest Territories final. It'll be the 21st time that Galusha will represent NWT at the Scotties. On that team, Galusha skips, throws lead stones, and Joanne Rizzo, who is from Ontario, throw is the final two rocks. Their current CTRS ranking is number 19. So there's a number of playdowns that are taking place this weekend. We'll review all those on the show next week. I'll just quickly run through who they are. In BC, the men and women are playing. Alberta, the women. Manitoba, the women. Ontario, the men and the women. Northern Ontario, men and women. Quebec, men and women. Newfoundland, men and women. PEI, men and women. Alberta's men's championship will be held February 7th to 11th, Saskatchewan, January 30th to February 4th, and Manitoba, February 5th to 11th. And those are the ones I have on my fingertips. I didn't get the other ones. There's a few more to happen, particularly in the territories and smaller provinces in Atlantic Canada, but I don't have those on my fingertips. So that's what's happening next weekend.
So there you go. Good wrap-up, Warren. You've done your homework, gold star, on what's happening with all the playdowns.
Busy time of year to follow.
Man, is it ever. Kev, what do you think of all of it?
Well, playdown season. I kind of wonder, congratulations to all the winners. That's fantastic. And go battle. I love hearing that Colleen and Kim.
Yeah.
That's wonderful they're coaching. I didn't know that. Good on them. No big surprise their team won. That's a pretty strong coaching staff. But wouldn't it be neat? And then maybe I'm offside. Let's hear from people on getting back to us on email. But wouldn't it be great to have all the women's provincials, on 1 week.
Yeah, wouldn't it?
Well, I just, right. No, but as a celebration of curling, like I think it would be really good, like from a marketing standpoint, to have all across the entire country, the territories, all of it on one weekend. Boy, that would be awesome. And then the men's too, a different week though, not the same week, a different week. Like say 2 weeks later, have all the men's provincials all on one weekend. It'd just be a huge festival across the country. I don't know. It seems to me that makes sense. Having it, like Warren, it's going to take how many weeks for the women's? It's 3 different weeks, right?
Actually, the women will all be done this week. So it's virtually they've done theirs in 2 weekends. The men's a little more diversified. I think going to end on February 11th, be Alberta and Manitoba.
So same thing, about 2 weeks instead of one. Like it'd be a lot. It seems to me marketing 101 says have it all in 1 weekend and just across the whole country, just blow it out of the water. I think that would be great.
Super great. Yeah. Kev, when you won the province to get yourself into the Brier for the 1,000th time in your career, what did you do between winning the provincial and going to the Brier with your team? Did you like pour it on every day? Everyone had to quit work and be at the rink all day long or what?
Well, that's the thing. So it would be about the same time as this year's early February, the men's provincials, and then the Brier started early March.
Right.
So you had about three, four weeks between the two. But there weren't any events because other provinces are playing and the Scotties was playing. Mm-hmm. So there was nothing in between. So you just had to practice and maybe have a practice game or something. Back then, there were super leagues in cities that the top players played in.
Right.
And the players now are so darn busy running around the world that they don't usually play in leagues at their clubs. Mm-hmm. But back in the day at the Otwell Curling Club, which is still going strong, we had the Super League there for many, many, many years. And then it moved around. But it still kind of exists, but not like it did. It used to be a really strong league. And that would give you a chance to play once a week and then practice around that, Jim. Now it's tough. Like we need to have more events in the February, March calendar around the world. In talking to Unjin Kim, I'm getting off a little bit off line here, but what the heck. In talking to their manager, Miles, heck of a nice guy, went for dinner with them the weekend before Red Deer. And they played Red Deer, and then they were flying from Red Deer to play an event in Switzerland. And then they're done, and unless they're in the Worlds. Mm-hmm. But it can't be Kim and Gim, right? Only one of them can be in the Worlds. Well, the other one has nothing to do until the Players' Championship. So there's a real void in there for the world's best, especially women's teams, and men too, but really women. We need an event in March desperately for women, a world caliber tour style event in March for females. It's a really, really important, I think, to be able to keep everything growing, just keep the young teams able to play in these events and so on.
Right.
I think we need an event for both men and women at that level in February and March, because these playoffs, when they start rolling, they don't involve a lot of teams. And as a result, a lot of these teams end up sitting idle through the time of year when they should be very active. So it's like many other things, it needs to be turned upside down and shook a bit.
Well, yeah, especially the young ones, yes. Warren, because the older player who's, like a Brad Gugeau and, you got a Mark Kennedy, and these guys are, they're older, but they're so smart and good that they generally win. And it's the young ones coming up who we need to make sure they have events to play in right till the end of April. Need to keep them busy so they can catch up quicker, kind of in the case of Scotland, where their athletes are... They're in their 20s, for goodness sakes, and they're so good already. We need to be able to build our Canadian athletes that quickly and that young. And it's hard to do when you have the older group winning all the time. And February, March, there's nothing to do here.
Hey, Grand Slam of Curling, are you listening to this? Maybe to put another event in. Hey, GSOC, okay? Let's throw another spiel in there somewhere. Very good, Kevin. Warren, you're back on both the Scotties and Brier. They need to determine one more spot. It's a wild card in each of the men's and women's championship. What's it looking like, Warren?
Well, let's talk about this, because this is quite fascinating as to how this is unfolding. So These results are as a result of last Monday, so it's as current as I can put my hands on. But let's take a look at the top three on the Canadian team ranking system. Holman, Jones, Einarsson. They're already all in the Scotties. Mm-hmm. Number four is Caitlin Laws. If she wins Manitoba, she's in. But if she doesn't, she'll be the wild card. Caitlin wins Manitoba. We then look to number five. That's Selena Sturme. If she wins Alberta, Caitlin wins Manitoba. We'll then look at number six, Danielle Inglis. Right now, she's on track to potentially win Ontario. So, Laws wins Manitoba. Sturme wins Alberta. Inglis wins Ontario. We now go to number seven, Corinne Brown, BC, and she's currently doing quite well in the BC playoffs. So
who's next?
So this is interesting. So now we go to number eight, which is Kate Cameron.
Oh, geez.
And so if Laws, Sturme, Inglis, and Brown all win their provinces, number eight, Kate Cameron, will be the selection. So I think it's very unique. It'll be the first time ever that you would have even the top seven ranks, never mind top eight in the Scotties. So that's pretty fascinating.
Which is your dream come true, Warren. You've always said, let's get the best teams in there. Hmm?
Yeah, we're getting closer to that. So let's look at the men. It's pretty equally as interesting. So number one and number two, Bachar Gushu, they're in. Then now we go to number three, Kevin Cooey. If he doesn't win Alberta, he'll take that spot. But if he wins to Alberta, we'll then go to number four, Matt Dunstan. He's already in. But now we have a situation here where Dunstan is not going to be in the Manitoba playoff, but Crothers will be. He's number five. So if he wins Manitoba, he'll be in. If he doesn't, he will take that spot. But let's assume that Cooey wins Alberta and Crothers wins Manitoba. We now go to Mike McCune, number six. He could win Saskatchewan. Okay. Which now we go to Aaron Selinsky, number seven. If Cooey doesn't win Alberta, Selinsky could. So he could be in there. And then we go to number eight, Ryan Kleiter, Saskatchewan. That's about as deep as we can go because either him or McCune will win Saskatchewan, I think, not both of them.
Holy cow, though.
This is amazing. We could go as deep as number eight on the ranking system. We'll also be in the Brier. So, and look who gets left out if that was to happen. Karsten Sturme is number nine.
Don't give up, fellas. You may wake up and go, God, we're 18th in the rankings. That's okay. We got a shot at the Brier.
So I think this is because of what they've done to modify the Brier as far as wildcards are concerned. This could be the first time in Brier and Scotty's history that we see probably as high as the number seven or even eight ranks all in the event.
So safe to say, Kevin, this might be the thickest and best field ever in a long time?
Well, if certain things happen, yeah. Yeah, which is great. Well, it's perfect to have all the best teams in your national championship. So you get the strongest possible team to the world championship and have a chance to get on that podium. So great.
Cool, man. Warren, you're still on. There was the event here I talked about in Tempe, Arizona. The Ed Wernick Golden Wrench Classic. And it brings in a lot of teams, Warren.
Well, it did. It brought in some pretty good teams from Canada. And I'll just go through who the final four were to give you some idea. So John Epping was in the fours, Ontario. Karsten Sturme from Alberta. John Schuster, one of the top teams in the United States. Ryan Coulter from Saskatchewan. And in the end, Sturme played Schuster in the final, and Sturme won 7-2. So that Sturme team is another one that's starting to make its presence known.
Not the first time we've heard his name. Yeah, right. Well, there you go. That's what's happening around the curling world. Next, Hot Rock Topics, brought to you by Coyote Tractor. If you have work to do, Coyote has the tractors, the UTVs, ZTRs, and compact construction equipment to do it. Coyote, we dig dirt. It was noted this past weekend in Red Deer at the Grand Slam of Curling event that Scotland had three men's teams in the event, which was cool. With two of them reaching the final eight, the really interesting point is the age of all these three teams. Team Mallet, average age 29. Team White, average age 25. And Team Crike, average age 22. Good God, they still have homework to do. They're so young. So, Warren, how's that compare with the obvious question, Canada's average age?
Well, before I get to that, let's talk about that isn't the end of Scotland. There's another young team there, Kyle Waddell. They're number 21 in the world ranking system, and it's also part of the Scottish system. Mm-hmm. Cameron Brace, another Scottish team in there, he's number 17, but he's outside of the system. So he's doing very well also. But then we look at Canada, and again, those are young teams. Of our top five men's teams, I'm not going to talk about the women because that'll get confusing, but it's similar. There are two players who are 26 years old and one who is 29. The rest are all over 30 and many of them over 40. And give me an example. The Botcher average age is 37. Gushu is 42. We look to the U.S. side. Again, they got two teams that are pretty much in that category as well that are doing well. Corey Dropkin, their average age is 31. But the Casper team that's just showing on the horizon now, they're 24. If we look at some of the other teams at the world level, Joel Rotanas is 41, but the team average age is 31. The Swallow average age is 30. And there are two or three younger teams right behind those guys in Switzerland as well. Ramsfell is 29. So, interesting about Scotland. So, who developed the Scottish teams? David Murdoch, through training camps, selection, and placement of the players. And it's kind of interesting. I did some research as to what exactly happens in Scotland as to how they select these teams. And it's quite fascinating as to the fact that they can apply to go into these selection camps that they do. And I think these camps last a couple of weeks. They evaluate them, and this was directly from British Curling. They evaluate them on a number of areas, including statistics, sweeping, strength training, fitness, etc. And at the end of it, they select two teams, two men, two women, to be part of the actual national program. And there's no guarantee to anyone when they go into this process that they will be positioned with any particular team. So it's interesting what they're doing. And to where that's all going to go, is Canada ever going to start to move in that direction at all? I mean, go back to 1987 with the Olympic trials that we held for the Olympics in Calgary in 88. And there was some experimenting done with this very idea for the trials that were held in April of 87. Eight teams, four went through the traditional process of what they had won for the previous 2 years. Four went through selection camps. In the end, the finals of the trials for both men and women, there was one selection camp team and one team that went through the regular process. In the end, the selection camp team, Linda Moore, won on the women's side, and the traditional way, Lukowich won on the other side. But what's really interesting, the survey that was done following that, and Kevin, it was Rob Krebs who actually conducted that survey, so he's probably pretty up on this. 75% of the players said they liked the selection process. Yet, because of the negative activity that took place around the whole thing through the media and a few of the old boys, everybody was afraid to continue it, and it got dropped.
I don't know if there was any negativity. I don't remember Ed Wernick being mad about it at all. speaking of the golden wrench, yeah. Right? We're speaking of the golden wrench. I don't think Ed was not a fan of that system.
Well, he wasn't the only one. He was the vocal one. But, I mean, there was a whole bunch of the old boys who kind of, you know, a bunch of them chose not to go near that selection camp process. And they didn't say a lot, but, you know, you knew what they were thinking, right?
Well, everyone knew what Ed Wernick was thinking.
You didn't have to guess.
Yeah, there were always a couple of words that Ed used, the international words. All that being said, Warren, about the age, you know, Gushu's winning everything and he's over 40. Cooey's, you know, up there. Botcher's up there. Great curlers, but I guess you're saying we need to develop the younger ones.
Okay, let's look at 5 years from now, Jim. Let's look at these Scottish teams who are all in their 20s now. So Gushu and Cooey, they're all going to be retired by that point in time. Who in Canada is going to replace them, and what's their experience going to be going against these Scottish teams and some of the other ones in the world that are up playing at the top level now?
Is this our first fight? I disagree.
I just got to say, Botcher is not, I don't know if he's getting up there, Jim.
Right.
I think Brendan's 32. I think yeah. So, like, I got still a pretty young guy, but his team with Mark and Ben
yeah.
on it,
yeah.
you know, that certainly raises the age up, but Brendan's going to be around a long, long time
yeah.
still. Yeah, but to Warren's point though, I think what your point is people like Sturme, who's really, really good, hasn't had a chance really to get on the stage yet because, like, you know, he goes down to the US event, the Golden Wrench, and he wins it.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't get to slams very much, or maybe not at all yet. So you know what I mean? Like they're not getting the exposure to the big events like the young Scottish teams.
Well, we'll have to wait and see. 5 years is a long way down the road, but I'm gonna make a note. I'm gonna say I proved Warren wrong. All the old guys are still winning.
in their 50s, Jim.
There you go. That was Hot Rock Topics. What are we hearing? We are hearing that one of the most famous curling rinks in the world looks like the De Weirs Ice Rink in Perth, Scotland, is possibly going to close. What's that all about, Warren?
Well, that was an interesting social media post came out towards, I guess it was the end of last week, that the city council of Perth and Kinross had decided to tear down the old building that housed the De Weirs Rink in Perth, and they're going to build a new multiplex, and curling wasn't going to be part of it. And there's been a huge outcry in Scotland through various sectors since then. What I'm seeing in social media now that the council might reconsider. But one more time, I mean, I remember Bruce Mowat talking to us about a year ago that the rinks in Scotland, in which I believe there's about 15 or was, that he saw them going down the line having a huge issue going forward because, again, guess what? The cost of hydro was getting completely out of reach. There was another rink closed about a year ago in Glasgow, the Brayhead, which Kevin and I are both familiar with, and that was the only rink in Glasgow, so there's nothing over there anymore. So it's another wake-up call as to, not just in Canada, but around the world, everybody would start to get their attention focused on making sure that these rinks, clubs, are going to be able to continue. And that hydro has to start to become a topic of discussion by everyone because the cost of it's going to go right out of sight, I think.
Do you remember that rink, Kev?
In Glasgow? I've been there in years and years and years. When did they close, Warren, the Glasgow?
The last year was the last year. That was Richards. Okay. That was Richards' operation, right?
Oh, is that? Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's been a long time, Jimmy, since I was there. But yes, yeah, I remember being there for sure. Yeah, when it comes to clubs closing down, I think that's certainly something we got to worry about. The Avenir Curling Club in Edmonton, where I made ice, where my dad made ice, and where my great-grandfather made ice, they're selling off their assets, so I don't think they're opening again. And that was a really wealthy club up to just a few years ago. You know, I think there's lots of things that need to be looked at. The management of these clubs is very important. Clubs that are doing well are doing very well, and the clubs that aren't at all. So, you know, there's certainly some help needed when it comes to the management of these facilities and building new ones. We need to get, you know, some business people building new facilities, but I'm not sure lone standing curling clubs make sense. They should be combined with summer activities, and then that way you can have a big banquet facility in the building and a proper catering setup and all of that year-round 12 months. It's really hard for a curling club who's going to be closed in May, June, July, and August to be able to pay, to Warren's point, all the hydro and all the costs when you're closed and not making money.
Yeah, this idea of only being open 6 months a year. And the other interesting thing, you know, the Avenir is a good example. That's along a very busy road, street, and nobody seems to be selling the naming rights to their buildings. I mean, you sell the naming rights to the Avenir and put it on the flashing, its neon sign on the, I guess it would kind of be the northeast corner of that building. Man, there'd be a lot of people see that sign in the course of a year.
Yeah, you're right across from Nate. Which
right
is
across
a
from
school
Nate.
I mean, that's many, many thousands
yeah.
of people.
And that's 18th Avenue, isn't it? Goes by there.
It's actually Princess Elizabeth on its way to 118th, but Kingsway Mall's right behind it. No, Kingsway Mall is a crazy place.
The sponsorship value of signage on that building would have to be worth something significant, and why none of them seem to go this way, I've suggested before, I don't quite understand. Anyway, maybe it's education.
I'll tell you what you do then. So those curling rinks that shut down this summer, Kev, obviously the sheets come out. Throw in some pickleball courts, and I guarantee you, you'll have a big crowd coming in there, right?
Yep.
Pickleball's crazy.
Yeah. Boys, take it easy. Kevin, thanks a lot. We'll be back next week with another episode of Inside Curling. I'm the only guy of you guys who came to Phoenix. The temperatures was plus six yesterday. It was colder here than it is for Warren. And it's been raining for 2 days.
In Phoenix.
Jesus,
man. It's kind of about the same weather here, Jim. You should have come to Vancouver.
Yeah. Hey, Phoenix, this just in. It's a desert, okay? It's a desert. We'll talk to you later, everybody. Thanks for joining us. And we'll see you next week.